The following Dharma talk was given by Danica Shoan Enkele-sensei at the Center of New York City. Shoan-sensei is a teacher in the Mountains and Rivers Order. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered freely for the benefit of all.
Good morning, everyone. Hojen-sensei, as I was leaving the monastery to come down here on Friday night, Hojen-sensei stopped me in the hallway and said, "Tell everyone I love them." So I promised I would pass that message along. Yeah. So Hojen-sensei is up at the monastery to be part of the conclusion of our fall Ango, which is a big ceremony today on the mountain. Called Shuso Hosen Ceremony, and I'll speak a little bit about that further on, but it's the conclusion of the Ango here at the temple too. And so I wanted to turn to this koan as a way of appreciating what's being offered in Zen training and practice, as just like the most exquisite medicine. So this is from the Mumon Khan, case 19. Ordinary mind is Tao. Zhao Zhou once asked Nan Chuan, "What is Tao?" Nan Chuan answered, "Ordinary mind is Tao." "Then should we direct ourselves toward it or not?" asked Zhao Zhou. "If you try to direct yourself toward it, you go away from it," answered Nan Chuan. Zhao Zhou continued, "If we do not try, how can we know that it is Tao?" Nan Chuan replied, "Tao does not belong to knowing or to not knowing. Knowing is illusion, not knowing is blankness. If you really attain to Tao of no doubt, it is like the great void, vast and boundless. How then can there be right and wrong in the Tao?" At these words, Zhao Zhou was suddenly enlightened. Mumon's commentary. Questioned by Zhao Zhou, Nan Chuan immediately shows that the tile is disintegrating, the ice is dissolving, and no communication whatsoever is possible. Even though Zhao Zhou may be enlightened, he can truly get it only after studying for 30 more years. Mumon's poem. Hundreds of flowers in spring, the moon in autumn, a cool breeze in summer, and snow in winter. If there is no vain cloud in your mind, for you, it is a good season. Stu, would you pass me that clock so that I can just be aware of time? Because once I get going... I'll just say that the tiniest bit about koans, because I know a lot of you are here for the first time this morning, and so this might be your first exposure, and it can kind of feel like an obscure teaching tool. But Zen is an ancestral tradition, which means that the living wisdom that each one of us already possesses in full is awakened through direct contact and working with a teacher, and that this has been going on across centuries and comes down to us today because of that ongoing passing along of it's passing along is not quite the way to say it, because there's nothing that's actually passed along, but it's kind of like our own Buddha eye opens. And so in those centuries, of teachers and students working together, certain encounters, certain exchanges, certain bits of work that were done between a teacher and a student were especially potent for that student and that real moment, and then potent enough that they were kind of collected and retold and used, recycled, you might say, to work with students, other teachers working with other students. And so this kind of training continues and continues in this order today. And so this is an exchange that's purported to have happened between a very two really significant teachers in the lineage back in the early days of Chan. So Zen is Chan originally, having sort of come into its own as a school in China. And Zen is the Japanese pronunciation of that same character, Chinese character, meaning meditation, essentially. And so these two people, Zhao Zhou and Nanchuan, are they appear in many koans, and are it's a kind of a significant teacher-student relationship. So I think that's enough to orient you a little bit, and I'll speak a little bit to the dialogue in hopes that we can all glean something from it. Okay, yeah. The Zen koans are pointing in a really direct way to non-conceptual wisdom, and so if we don't understand it with our rational mind, that's how it's meant to be. You're not supposed to understand it with your rational mind. If you think you do, you've missed the point. So it's a different kind of inquiry and a different way of working. I think that's enough for us to dig in a little bit more. So this teaching, ordinary mind is Tao, or ordinary mind is the way. In a way, I would say that this is like, for me, like an expression of the teaching that I find most vital and most just like rich with possibility in like all of Zen. This teaching that the most profound, the most liberative, the most complete is absolutely not separate from the everyday, the totally ordinary, the completely common. It's like a teaching that says, like, the thing that you're looking for, you not only already have it, like it's filling the universe. And if that lands in some part of you that feels like, you know, I know that that's true, I trust that that's true. But then we might ask, like, how do I get there then? And you know what? That's exactly what is happening in this koan. The student, Zhao Zhou, having received the answer that ordinary mind, if you want to know what the way is, what truth is, what reality is, it's right here. It's your ordinary mind. And then Zhao Zhou's response, well, okay, if that's the case, like, do I do something? Like, that's not my experience, right? We can hear that teaching and think like, okay, on some level, there's an intuitive resonance, but that's not my experience. And so what do I do? Zhao Zhou asks, do I direct myself toward it? And Nanchuan says, well, if you direct yourself toward it, then actually you're going to move away from it. Because when we direct ourselves towards something, we think we're going somewhere. And as soon as we're headed somewhere else, we're missing it. So this is this really like live question of how do we recognize what's already here. One piece that's essential in appreciating this teaching is to recognize that, like, in Zen, when we speak about ordinary, it's not ordinary, ordinary, right? Like, we can hear a teaching like ordinary mind is the way and feel like, I mean, I would feel a little bit gypped if I thought, like, it's talking about, like, my ordinary mind that's, like, grouchy and irritable or depressed or, you know, completely steeped in its habits. That usual sort of mix that we see all the time of just like anger and aversion and distraction and agitation, like that kind of ordinary mind, like that's not what we're talking about here. So then the question becomes, what kind of ordinary? What kind of ordinary? Oh, it's such a great question. So I have a memory that I've shared before, but it's a good one to bring out again. And many of you won't have heard this. And it's from when I was living at the temple. I lived here at the temple earlier in my training for a couple of years. And I was a resident monastic here. And Shugen Roshi at that time was the resident teacher here. And I did a lot of, like, you know, cooking and cleaning, and I was in a period where I hadn't ordained. I was considering monastic life, but hadn't made that commitment. And I was feeling just, like, so, I don't know, like, irritated by the whole setup, you know? And, like, we used to do this thing. I'm trying to think who, yeah, there's some of you who will remember this. We used to do this thing with, like, water conservation, where we would, like, wash the dishes and save the water from washing the dishes at the sink and then use that to flush the toilets. And so I remember just, like, hauling these buckets of kind of, like, gross water up and down the stairs to put them at all the toilets and being like, I'm so over this. Like, if this is what monastic Zen training is, like, just feeling so grouchy. And so one day I went into face-to-face teaching, private interview with Shugen Roshi, my teacher, and I was just feeling like that kind of irritable exasperation with, like, just the day-to-day drudgery, it felt like. And at the same time as that, I was seeing him with different eyes, and I had always really kind of admired and venerated him, and I was just feeling like he'd sort of fallen in my eyes a bit. And so very boldly, I cringe now to remember this, but I went into Dokusan, face-to-face teaching, and I was kind of iterating all of my complaints. You know, like this, and I'm sick of this, and this isn't working for me. And I said, and you're just an ordinary person. And he said, yes, but you don't yet know what ordinary is. So what kind of ordinary is this? Well, when the Buddhist teachings speak about purifying the mind, so there's like the Buddha sort of encapsulated the path by saying, the Buddhist path is ceasing from harm, practicing good, and purifying the mind. And we might bring our own understanding of, like, what pure means to that, and we'd be missing it. So in a Buddhist sense, it's like our being, our mind-heart, your mind-heart, just as it is, is complete. And that sense that we have that something's lacking, or that we're not enough, or that we need to really fix something here, like the problem, the struggle, that like that's a reflection of like there's something wrong here that I need to like rectify, and what am I going to do to like find my way, you know, and improve, fix what's broken, make whole what's incomplete. That the Buddha's teaching is like, no, actually, already you're perfect and complete. And that the practice is to start to recognize like all of that thinking, all of those notions, all of those views, that's the mistake. The comparing, judging mind, that's creating our suffering. And it doesn't have to be that way. And so when we train in Zazen and we train the mind, we're working right at this very rich edge of our habit and how we are and how we conceive of self and other, and kind of releasing that, practicing letting that go, and opening up the space to apprehend things as they actually are. So in that sense, ordinary doesn't need to be created. Already completely present. No big deal. You didn't have to do anything or be anyone. Totally ordinary. Totally ordinary. So for a koan teaching to have power for us, we need to be able to get inside it. In a sense, we have to make it personal. And so sometimes that is a bit of a leap, and that can take some practice. One thing that can help is to sort of imagine or recast the koan with people that you feel are just like you. So in my own training, working on many koans over many years, I found my way, with my teacher's encouragement, to imagining the koans that almost always take place between two men to take place between two women. So I had a whole field of women ancestors, nuns, who would be having these pithy exchanges. And so that helped me enter in. And so however we might feel distant or separate from the characters in a koan, we should feel encouraged permission to, in the imaginative sphere of our own mind, come in close. And then it's the real heart of it, the real heart of it is that the question needs to become our question. And this is a practice. That mind of inquiry, right, that is something that we really, it's like when you hear a teaching like this, ordinary mind is the way. Can you find the live question in yourself? It's a practice. It's starting to recognize how much we assume and starting to question. So all of those assumptions we have about who we are, we need to start to question. Like, well, actually, who am I? Actually. So this discovery of ordinary mind, this is so much a part of what Zen training is about. And we train in some really ordinary forms and activities to help clarify this. And I mentioned earlier that today up at our main house, the monastery in the Catskills in Mount Tremper, there's a culminating ceremony for the Ango. And this is, it's like happening, let's see, it's noon, so it's probably drawing to a close right about now. But there's one person who the teacher invites to lead the training period and be an example and model of practice. And for them, it's a real rite of passage into stepping into being a senior student. And so their practice has matured sufficiently in the eyes of their teacher that they can begin to take on some responsibilities for guiding the practice of the Sangha. And in a sense, it is a milestone moment on a very long path of recognizing this ordinary mind. So when we, like at the temple or at the monastery, when we train in recognizing this, we do some things that are super ordinary, but we like change the context. So we clean the bathrooms, super ordinary, but we do a service to the Bodhisattva of compassion before we clean the bathrooms. If that gets you excited, then you can come and participate. If you're like, I'm not so sure, then you should come check it out. And the thing is that it's all about how are you cleaning the bathroom. All right? Ordinary mind is the way. So all of Zen teachings are pointing us back again and again and again to our own clear, bright mind and heart. All right? Our own being. Our own capacity to experience. And so when we clean the bathrooms as a practice, we do it with complete attention. That's the practice. So for those of you who are newer and who maybe to just today received beginning instruction, there's that instruction to just be with the breath completely, to let all other thoughts and concerns to not pursue those as they arise. You recognize that they're arising, you see them, and then you let them go. You don't pursue them. You come back to the breath and you practice giving your whole attention to the breath. So when we clean a bathroom, we're like giving our whole attention just to that activity. Attention is so powerful. Right? And we can feel what happens when our attention is so scattered, and we can feel how hungry our capitalist culture is to have our attention and bring it in. Because we're giving our power when we give our attention. So when we contain and we choose where to give that attention and we really practice that awareness, it transforms our experience. And suddenly, cleaning the bathroom, right, is not just ordinary, but it's ordinary. We do the same kind of bringing liturgy and form into taking a meal. So we have a ceremonial meal that we do during intensive meditation retreats called Orioki. And in this, it's the same food that we always eat, but it's held within a context of it's kind of like the Zen forms are saying, like, look at what's happening. Don't miss it. It's here. And then when we have that bite of fruit salad. It's a classic breakfast item. It's not just ordinary. It's ordinary. And I always remember, and I'm so tickled by, there was a student once who came to silent meditation retreat for the first time, and for the first time experienced orioki, this form of taking a meal. And at the end of the retreat, came to me and said, "Oh my God, I have to get the recipe for that fruit salad. That was like the best fruit. Like, what did they do?" And I was like, "It's just ordinary fruit salad. But your mind was able to actually taste." So it's like we're in the middle of this like incredible life, right? And once in a while we like brush, like we look at the moon and we feel our heart is pierced, or we have a moment with a stranger and we recognize like, oh. And then so much of the time, we're missing it, we're missing it, we're missing it. And Zen training is about like, it's so quick. Don't miss it. And then when we're like, how? It's like, okay, here's how. Here's how. You have to use your mind in a different way. So this using our mind in a different way, it's not so easy. It's not so easy. And in this exchange between Zhao Zhou and Nan Chuan, you can see that Nan Chuan is trying to help Zhao Zhou. This is such a beautiful little cup, by the way. This is, I haven't seen this. It's so pretty. It's also new for me to get to use a cup. So that's exciting too. So Zhao Zhou asked, then, should we direct ourselves toward it? A really great question. And Nan Chuan says, if you try to direct yourself toward it, you go away from it. Meaning like, anything, any moment that we think what we're looking for is somewhere else, red alert. We're like on the wrong, like we're headed off into the hills, like come back. So it's like Zazen is like totally the perfect practice, because we take our seat and then we're just like here. Our body is here. So we can't be confused, right? We can be confused in so many ways, but we can't be confused in that we're actually going to physically get up and go and find what we're looking for. That part is like pretty clear. Like, okay, no, if that were where I was going to find it, we'd be like putting on our shoes and heading out into Brooklyn. No, we give you beginning instruction. We say, sit still, completely still in this one spot. Okay, so we're like, all right, what I'm looking for must be here. Now what? Well, anything that we do with our mind to go out to look for it is the same. It's just a more subtle version, right? It's just a more subtle version. We're not literally putting on our shoes and heading out the door. But when we try to create a different state of mind, I just want to relax. Come on. I'm so stressed. Get the stress out of here. I just want to relax. No. That way of practicing is the same. It's directing ourselves somewhere else. So the crazy thing is, in that state of agitation or anxiety that we so desperately want to get rid of or through or out from, we have to actually meet it. We have to find the ordinary, ordinary. So we don't turn away. We don't turn away. It's a practice and it develops. We stay with what is. So we would actually allow ourselves to feel that feeling of anxiety but not in a story kind of way, in a really grounded, embodied, trusting way, that it can open up, that there's more there for us. Zhao Zhou asks, if we don't try, how can we know that it is Tao? How can we know that it's the way? If you just tell me, this is it, just sit with your anxiety, and I'm sitting here and I'm feeling anxious, like, how do I know that I'm practicing correctly? Like, can I trust that this is actually the way? And so, great question, right? And so Nan Chuan says, the Tao, the way, does not belong to knowing or not knowing. Knowing is illusion, and not knowing is blankness. So this becomes very rich for us as practitioners, because we're so, so deeply accustomed to the mind that knows, that we have to travel a bit of a journey within ourselves to start to loosen that. And that can be so frustrating and so difficult that many people will not be up for the journey. And that's okay. But for those who are, Nan Chuan said, if you really attain to Tao of no doubt, it is like the great void, so vast and boundless. How then can there be right and wrong in the Tao? So, putting away all of our distractions, letting go of all of our tendencies to seek outside, letting go of even recognizing, first you have to recognize it before you can let it go, recognizing that knowing mind, the mind that divides, that separates, that has a sense of self and other, that's continually creating that division. And so we talk and practice a lot about practicing being intimate with, and in this way of speaking, another way of saying that is to be one with, to come in completely close to your own experience. And so the breath is this excellent practice, because we experience the breath as something that's happening or that we're doing, right? As there's us and there's the breath. And in the practice of Zazen, in this kind of training, as our meditation and our attention stabilizes, we practice just being completely present with the breath and becoming the breath, letting that sense of separation of self and other, of me and the breath, start to melt and dissolve. In the commentary, it says, Muman is the master who collected these koans hundreds of years ago and then wrote a little bit of a commentary on it. And so he says, Nan Chuan immediately shows that the tile is disintegrating, the ice is dissolving, and no communication whatsoever is possible. And so the tile disintegrating and the ice dissolving, That's like our hardened, calcified mind, our categories, our knowingness, our self and other. That's what's dissolving. That's what's loosening. And so we do have to practice to make contact with this aspect of our mind and then let it ripen and mature, and all the while, as we're walking the way, we are more and more able to be with things as they are, and to taste the joy and the ease of being with what is, being with ourself as we are. And so in Zazen, there's this aspect of faith that's really important, because that tendency to go outside and to look elsewhere is so pervasive and so subtle. And so it takes a lot of sitting. And first we quiet the mind at a more basic level, right? If we're newer to sitting, or even just in the midst of like a busy life, even if we're an experienced practitioner, just to sit for half an hour a day, we may see like, oh my God, my mind is so filled with thoughts and opinions and judgments, right? It's moving all over. And so to let that stabilize sometimes takes longer, more intensive practice. But the mind does settle. The mind can settle. The mind will settle if our conditions are conducive, if we can allow it to settle. And then we speak about things as they are, sometimes as suchness. And Mumon's verse is like such a I love this one, this poem, such a generous portrait of suchness, right? Hundreds of flowers in spring, the moon in autumn, a cool breeze in summer, and snow in winter. So ordinary. And yet, so wondrous, right? When we're awake, when we can actually see the moon, when we can actually feel the breeze, when we can actually take in the flowers. Incredible. What more could we want? If there's no vain cloud in your mind, for you, it is a good season. And so that vain cloud, right, that's our self-centered kind of habitual mind. And we can watch, you know, here at the kind of conclusion of the fall Ango, going into the winter training period, what an opportunity to bring some intention into our practice. And maybe just to have the intention to let me watch and see my self-centered thinking. I want to be aware, so that we can recognize, like, wow, a lot of that is bringing me suffering. When I sit and stew about my own situation and think in terms of my own concerns, it can really, and we're really encouraged by the dominant culture to do that. You know, that's kind of our sense of how to be in the world. It's like a very self-centered view. But as that loosens, or if we can, you know, take up things in our life, relationships, community life, other things that bring us out of our creativity, that bring us out of that kind of inner vortex, will begin to more and more find ease, and that can open up and develop more and more. And when there's no vain cloud in the mind, when we've really released, even if it's just for a moment, that self-centered churn, then that good season. And it can be the life that we have right now, where we can look and see 100,000 problems and things that we would do differently, and recognize, like, actually, that is a view, and it's possible to be in our life as it is right now and feel the goodness of the season. It doesn't mean everything's perfect or how we want it to be, but it means, like, we're in it in a different way. So there is a well-being that is not dependent on circumstances, that we can be introduced to and then ongoingly develop a connection with. And the question is, where do we enter? And the answer is here. It's always here. Like actually, like this moment. So Zen training, Zen practice is learning, how do we enter this moment? And that's why we sit still and don't do anything else, so that we can practice entering here and now, just exactly as we are. I'm going to share a final poem. This is called Aimless Love by Billy Collins. This morning, as I walked along the lake shore, I fell in love with a wren. And later in the day, with a mouse. The cat had dropped it under the dining room table. In the shadows of an autumn evening, I fell for a seamstress still at her machine in the tailor's window, and later for a bowl of broth, steam rising like smoke from a naval battle. This is the best kind of love, I thought, without recompense, without gifts or unkind words, without suspicion or silence on the telephone. The love of the chestnut, the jazz cap and one hand on the wheel. No lust, no slam of the door. The love of the miniature orange tree, the clean white shirt, the hot evening shower, the highway that cuts across Florida. No waiting, no huffiness, nor rancor, just a twinge every now and then for the wren who had built her nest on a low branch overhanging the water, and for the dead mouse still dressed in its light brown suit. But my heart is always propped up in a field on its tripod, ready for the next arrow. After I carried the mouse by the tail to a pile of leaves in the woods, I found myself standing at the bathroom sink, gazing down affectionately at the soap, so patient and soluble, so at home in its pale green soap dish. I could feel myself falling again as I felt it turning in my wet hands and caught the scent of lavender and stone. Zen practice, ordinary mind, falling in love with what we already have.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about the Zen Center of New York City's programs, retreats, and residency, or to make a donation, please visit our website, zcnyc.org.